when I feel a little bit unmotivated, when I'm just procrastinating, I just go back to my Instagram feed and just look at all of the work I've done the past few weeks. And I just said to myself, okay, you have to go back to studying now and share some more. If you are at any age and any subject, languages, mathematics, and everything, using your social media to share with others, but also to yourself, what you have done is extremely motivating.
Welcome to the Changing Scripts podcast, where we hear language learning stories from people all over the world. Right now, we are focusing on Mandarin Chinese, but we'll be expanding out to other languages in the future. The host of this podcast is Stephanie Fuccio, and she was an English language instructor for about 15 years, mostly in Asia. She is also, as she would put it, very slowly learning how to read Mandarin Chinese. I'm sure she's not learning it that slowly, while living in Shanghai, China. My name is Ophelia, and I am the host of the Ophelia Vert YouTube channel, where I make videos about language learning, mostly, and currently about moving to the Netherlands. Steph and I met on YouTube, in fact, which is where the Changing Scripts project started, but in a slightly different form. The YouTube channel is where she documents her personal language learning journey, whereas this podcast is where she chats with others about their language learning stories. In this podcast episode, Steph talks with Tom Clément, Tom Reads on Instagram, a French university student who is studying Sinology in graduate school. Sinology is the study of Chinese language, history, customs, and politics. Tom has studied French, Spanish, Mandarin Chinese, Korean, Japanese, and Russian, but it is Chinese that he is most fascinated with. In fact, he admits to not liking learning languages until he started learning Chinese in the last 2 years of high school. What is it about the language that pulled him in and kept his attention? I'm afraid for that you will have to listen to his language learning story for the details of him studying Mandarin Chinese, both in Europe as well as in Asia. What I can tell you is that he is a very talented photographer with, as the kids would say, a very aesthetic Instagram feed. And what Tom puts out into the world about his studies and about his reading experiences outside of academic texts is thoughtful, relevant, and shared from a place of heartfelt enjoyment. If you have any comments or questions about this episode, please feel free to contact Stephanie on any social media platform. Steph Fuccio, Stephfuccio. Steph Fuccio. Also, you can contact me if you would like to at Devenir Polyglot, DevenirPolyglot on Twitter, or Devenir Polyglot with an extra T and an E because I had more space on Instagram to spell it correctly, if you would so wish. Let's meet Tom and find out about his language learning story.
Well, thank you so much, Tom, for joining us today on Changing Scripts.
Thank you, and I'm so happy to be here.
Can you give our listeners a little bit of you, how many languages you've learned so far in your life?
So far, so I'm a French native speaker, so I basically learned French from the day I was born. Then I started with, my second language was actually Spanish, because my mother is half Spanish, so meaning my grandmother is fully Spanish. And then I studied English at school at a very early age, but I think I've studied English more on my own than in school, actually. And then I started at high school with Chinese, and then on my own with Korean, Japanese, and Russian a little bit.
Oh my God, I didn't realize there were that many in your language tool belt. Holy cow.
Yeah, I absolutely love languages.
wait, so I lost track here. We've got French, Spanish, Chinese, Korean, Japanese, and I think I missed one.
Russian, just basics. For Korean, Japanese, and Russian is just like very beginning stuff.
Wow. All right. So let's back up to your first language. I like digging into people's heads, what they remember from learning their first language. So do you have any memories of learning French as a kid?
I do have some. I remember that it was kind of painful, especially for the, how can I say that, for the grammar, because in French you have every word is either feminine or masculine, and it just messed up in my head all the time, and you have to do a lot of thinking before even talking. You have to think how I conjugate this and how I conjugate that. So it was just a very painful process. In the end, it just, because it's my mother tongue, I hear it all the time. My parents talk to me, so it was kind of easy, but kind of painful. And still nowadays, I do like a lot of mistakes when I write.
See, as someone coming from English, a lot of us think that the genders on the nouns for you guys come easily. So it's kind of reassuring to hear that it doesn't.
Yeah, I have some friends studying French and they told me like, how did you learn that? I mean, it's just like kind of natural because I have to, it's my mother tongue. So I don't have all of the questions in my head. It's just normal and just the way the things are. Yeah. So I just wish them a huge good luck because I know kind of the struggle.
It's hard. Okay, let's stay chronological. So let's stay with French for a little bit. When you were a kid, did you like reading more than writing or speaking more? Like, was there a part of the language you enjoyed at all?
I think I always prefer reading. Like, I'm a huge reader, even nowadays.
Yeah.
So I really like reading, but I also really like listening. Yeah, pretty much all of the reading, listening, and talking to. I mean, I'm a huge talker, if I can say that this way. So.
Thank goodness.
And I think French language is actually very beautiful. So I'm kind of happy to be able to be fluent in this language.
Yeah, I think a lot of people agree with you. I'm one of them. French is beautiful to listen to. French rap, funny enough, is really beautiful.
I don't really listen to rap music. So.
I couldn't even name anybody anymore, but I used to listen to just a little bit. I can't even name anything. I just think, wow, rap music is so harsh, but when you put French in there, it sounds so much more delicate.
Yeah, I think it's pretty true, actually. Yeah.
Yeah. So what did you read as a kid? Do you remember what kind of books you read?
I think I've read a lot of stuff. I mean, when I was really young, I was really into witch things, like Happy Witch, Funny Witch, and it is like a whole series in French. So I really like that.
Yeah.
And pretty much everything, like, I think all of the things that all around the world people are reading, but translating in French, obviously. So, yeah.
Okay. Do you remember learning French at school? Like what the French classes were like?
Yes, I kind of remember when I was really young. I think you call it elementary school. Like I was very, very young.
Okay.
And I remember our teacher put like everything on the wall, on the blackboard.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned the week name, like Monday, Tuesday, and it has like a lot of colors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why right now I think my memory is more visual, because at a very early age, I just remember the colors, the words, how they look and stuff like that. So I think it really helped shape my memory in a way. Like right now I'm more a visual learner for sure.
I remember something similar in elementary school or primary school, but I remember the sounds. Like I remember they would have like a specific sound with the word underneath it, and we had those plastered all around the room.
Yeah, you have to stick on the wall. You have just like very interactive to learn. That was amazing.
I mean, I wish that we would do that more with adults, actually. For me, for as an adult learner, I wish there was more of that. So did you say your mom was from Spain?
No, my mom is, was born in France, but her mother is fully Spanish.
Oh, okay. So was your mom speaking Spanish to people in the home or to you in the home?
Yeah, I think at the beginning, yes. But I have a sister and she talked to my sister half French, half Spanish. So my sister is actually bilingual in both of the languages. But with me, for some reason, I still ask her why she didn't do that to me, because she didn't. I just had to learn Spanish kind of on my own with my family. And it's not very fluent, but I can still understand, speak, but it's not very fluent. You know?
And this is your older sister?
Yeah, older sister.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, my parents are Italian. There's my older brother, older sister, and me, and none of us speak Italian. Although I can understand some angry words, shall we say? but yeah, I can't really speak anything. And your father's?
Fully French.
Fully French, 100%. Okay, let's talk about this multitude of other languages that you have. Holy cow. Spanish, Chinese, Korean, Japanese, and Russian. Did you study Spanish in school?
Yeah, I did at the age of 13 or 14 to the end of high school. So I was probably 18, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy learning languages at that point?
No, actually, no. I actually really hated it because I don't really think in France, teaching languages and learning languages at school, we don't have like a good method and a way to do it. So I didn't really like that.
What was the method? How did they teach you guys?
The method is just like you have a book, you don't, I mean, first of all, the teacher have horrible accents. So it's all French accents. So I was like, okay, for me, it wasn't really a foreign language. It was just a French language, something different. Mm-hmm. And then we just use books and we just repeat with a horrible accent, with no correction. And we just kind of on our own. And I think probably it's personal because of my teacher, I'm sure there is like incredible teachers other places. But mine, unfortunately, didn't convey the passion for language and why we should learn languages. I didn't have like this first step of, wow, languages are amazing, you have to study them. I did not have the why and how kind of thing.
Oh, that's a really good way to put it, the why and how. Let's break from the timeline for a moment. When did that passion for languages hit you? Because it clearly did at some point.
Yeah, it did at the end of my high school years. I was probably 17. And it is basically because, or thanks to my English teacher, she understood that I had a very struggle learning English. I made like a lot of mistakes. But she kind of gave me her passion for English. Mm. And from time to time, because I had this teacher, because in France, high school is in 3 years, and I had her for the two last ones. Mm-hmm. And so I just really felt in love with her way of teaching, of giving me tips and how can I improve, because that's what I'm here for. And at that point, I realized that, oh my God, I'm currently improving my English. Languages are so fun. You can meet new people. And I just fell in love with all of this. So I was like, a brand new world opened to me. I was like, okay, languages is definitely for me.
That's really, really cool. What kind of methods was she doing that was different?
It was because the normal method that I just told you before, but because I was kind of more interesting because I knew she was passionate about her work. Mm-hmm. I just, after classes, I always went to her like, how can I improve that? She gave me online resources, mm-hmm. tips to watch TV shows and what things that I could like. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how I kind of started to learn more on my own, actually.
Wow. Okay. That's really cool. Let's go back to 13. So you started studying Spanish at 13. When did you start learning Chinese?
Chinese was my first year of high school.
Okay. So what year is that in France? Is that 14, 15?
Yes. Yeah. 14, 15. Probably 15.
15 years old. Why did you pick Chinese?
I actually wanted to pick Japanese, but in my city, we don't have anything to learn Japanese. Mm. So I went to see, there is like a big week in France where you can visit high schools and stuff to see where to actually go. Mm. And we just, with my parents, came upon this and just said, my mother said, oh, they have like a Chinese course. I was like, oh, let's see. So we just talked with the Chinese teachers. And we just like, okay, that's it. I have to do Chinese because I didn't know any Chinese beforehand. And I was like, that could be pretty cool. I mean, so I just started learning at it and just felt in love like within 2 weeks.
Wow. Okay. What part of it did you like?
I really like how different it was from French and English and Spanish because that was the only languages I knew.
Yeah.
And yeah, I felt in love with the characters, the way it's written, the way you speak. And it's just fascinating to learn an Asian language, being an European. It was like amazing. And at that time, there is still, I think, around the world that Chinese is just so hard. It is an amazing language. You have to learn Chinese. And it just pushed me to continue it.
I think people still think that. And I'm not sure they're completely wrong. It is a little hard to learn.
And you know what? With taking in consideration all the languages I've learned so far, I think Chinese was so far the easiest for me to actually learn.
Okay, interview done. Are you kidding me?
No, seriously, because if you compare to French, it is just so easy. Yeah, you know, there is like no tense, you know, there is no genders. It's just you learn the vocabulary and you're done.
tones, no spaces between words, time being in weird places in the sentence. I'm just trying to think. Really, even easier than Russian.
Russian, I just started like 1 year ago, so I think Russian could be harder than Chinese.
Definitely. Oh, okay. Okay. Wow. That's amazing. It's interesting you said that because I came to the realization very, very recently that I think the reason I've stuck with Mandarin Chinese and I didn't with Spanish or Italian is because it's so different that I don't confuse it with English.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
Interesting. Wow. Okay, you were taking classes in Chinese. What were the classes like?
Amazing. And I think it's because of my teachers that I'm still doing, like, I'm currently doing a master's degree in Chinese studies. And that's why from this class, I never stopped learning Chinese. Mm-hmm. And it was very interactive, very interesting, because we didn't only learn about Chinese language, we learn about Chinese culture, language, people, history. And it is just fascinating because so far I've never heard about this in a much informative way. So it was just fascinating, and the teachers were really great.
Yeah. Were your Chinese teachers, were they from China? Were they quote unquote native Chinese speakers?
No, they were both French. The first one was French, but she lived in China for about 20 years. So
wow.
For me, it was basically, she sounded Chinese to me. And the second one, she lived in Taiwan for about 5 years. So I had the chance to see the kind of a difference between China, Taiwan at very early stage of my Chinese learning.
Ooh, dig into those differences. What differences did you notice between the two speakers?
I think I noticed more when I lived in Taiwan, because I think it's the way they pronounce things. Mm-hmm. In Taiwan, it's more like a si-si-si kind of language. But in China, I mean, in Beijing, it's more like a shi-shi-shi kind of language. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you, I think you understand that.
I do. I didn't realize that you lived in Taiwan. I actually lived in Tainan in 2003 for a year. Where did you live?
I live in Kaohsiung.
Oh my God, that's right next to Tainan. Yeah. What year were you there?
I was in 2014.
Oh, yeah, that's a long time after.
Yeah, I just went there for an exchange student for you.
Yeah. No, a lot of people go to like Kaohsiung and Tainan and stuff because it's traditional Chinese. So, oh my gosh. So you started learning with traditional?
Yeah, and at that time, I didn't know the difference between Chinese and traditional. So before 2 weeks ago, going to Taiwan, my teacher told me like, oh, and you have to be careful for the Chinese characters. I was like, why? And she just showed me the difference. I was like, oh my God, what am I doing?
But you started with the harder one, so it was easier for you to see the simplified one.
Yeah. But after coming back to France doing my bachelor degree in Chinese, I had to switch back to simplified Chinese. So my brain was just so messed up because
Wow. Okay, wait. Let's go back to this. So when you started learning Chinese at 15 years old in school, were you learning traditional or simplified Chinese?
Simplified Chinese.
Simplified. And so, but yeah. When you went to Kaohsiung in Taiwan, you were doing traditional?
Yeah, only traditional.
Only traditional. And then you came back to France and were still doing simplified.
Yes.
I'm wondering how much we should explain this to the listeners. See, I have about 700 words that I know, depending
That's
on the...
pretty cool.
No, it's not. But thank you for saying that. But so for me, it doesn't feel like that big of a difference from the simplified to the traditional. But your vocabulary in Chinese is way above mine. So did it feel like a big difference when you went to Taiwan and saw the traditional?
At first, not really, because when I moved to Taiwan, I just knew about 400 words. Because that's what I had to learn for my baccalaureate, like the exam we had in France.
Really?
Yeah. And so I just knew this amount of words. So I just learned more. Learning the new ones was more easy to relearn the ones I already knew.
Right. Yeah. Just for the listeners, there isn't an alphabet. There are 214 radicals that make up the words. So, and they can be combined, and sometimes it makes sense, and sometimes it looks like
they make sense. But
yeah, sometimes it does not. I'm convinced the word for bath
like to take a bath?
I don't remember.
You want to look at it? I have no, I've just finally, I took like an accidental 2 month break off and now half my vocabulary is.
And mine is just more technical since I'm more doing like classical Chinese. Just like
horrible. Oh, here it is. Is it
Zao?
Zao?
Oh, yeah.
Zao. Yeah. I'm convinced this looks like somebody sitting in a bathtub. Like,
yeah, now that you say that.
Yeah, I know it isn't. In my brain, that looks like somebody sitting in a bathtub. Z-A-O in the third tone. So if you look that up in Pleco, you can see what I'm talking about. But anyway, okay, so you went from simplified to traditional and back.
Yeah. And then I kind of went back to traditional because of classical Chinese. So sure. Just like move again and again and again.
Oh my gosh. But you mentioned a slight sound difference between mainland Chinese and I don't want to say Taiwanese. Chinese, yeah, there's also Taiwanese, the language. Yeah. Other than that difference between the z and the c, whatever you just said a few minutes ago, mm-hmm. Were there any big differences in how they used the language?
I think no, probably for some vocabulary, like sometimes things you say in Chinese, in China, mm-hmm. You can't say in Taiwan and either way. So I had to learn a new way to express myself for some basic things that I knew I was like, okay, I know Chinese, I will be great. But when you go there, you start talking Chinese, like in mainland China, They just don't understand you. So it's just a few things, but sometimes the few things are the most important ones. You end up like have to learn new things.
Yeah. Do you remember any examples of that?
Like, you're welcome. In Chinese, in mainland China, it would be 不客气.
Yeah.
In Taiwan, they never said that. You just say 不会. It's like,
oh.
会, like the ability to do. 不会.
Oh, like don't need to do.
Always like few things like that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So it's not different words for the same word. It's actually a different expression used for that.
Yeah. Sentence. It's more like different expressions to say things.
Oh, same language. Sure it is. Did they speak Taiwanese down in Kaohsiung?
No, my friends down there just teach me a few words, but only a few words because I had to concentrate on Chinese.
Oh, yeah. From what I remember in Tainan, which there was a lot of Taiwanese speakers at the time, 2003, so this is a long time ago, there were 7 tones and it didn't have a written language, I think. Yeah. That's just insane. 5 tones aren't enough. Let's add 2 more.
Yeah, and I remember like in Cantonese, they have 9 tones or probably 10, I don't remember. So Cantonese, not right now.
It's just too much. People say, oh, there's a lot of, you can hear a lot of Chinese in Vietnamese, but again, a different tonal language. I'll be happy once I get one under my belt.
Okay, so I've said it before and I'll say it again. There's a lot of language learning content creators on YouTube, but not enough of them in the podcasting space. And by language learning, I don't mean language teaching. I mean actual language learners sharing their process as they learn a language. Cam, host of Mandarin by Mistake, is helping to fill that gap. And we're very excited to have him. So here's Cam telling you about his podcast.
Hi, my name's Cameron, and I'm a language learner. Sometimes I feel we could use an anonymous support group where we could get together and share the problems that come when learning a language. That's why I started my podcast, Mandarin by Mistake, where I talk about my experiences in teaching myself Mandarin Chinese. So you get to hear the good, the bad, and the definitely ugly side of my language learning experience. If you'd like to join in on the therapy, head on over to my Instagram page, which is mandarin.by.mistake, or just search Mandarin by Mistake on Podbean or iTunes. I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Okay, I don't have a favorite episode of Mandarin by Mistake because they're all so stinking good. What I can tell you to do to start listening to his podcast is to start at the latest one, which is a very resource-heavy one, but will give you a sense of how he describes the things that he uses to learn Mandarin Chinese. It'll also give you a sense of my favorite feature in his podcast, which is his mistake of the week. I think that is a brilliant thing to reinforce in language learners' brains, that the whole point is to make mistakes, because by the mistakes, you're going to actually learn how to use the language. And I think that is absolutely positively brilliant. So, Mandarin by Mistake is Cam's podcast name. I strongly suggest you check it out. Thank you. Let's get back to Tom, another language learning content creator.
Wait, so your master's now is in Chinese studies. Are your classes in Chinese?
Half of them is in Chinese and yeah. Half of them are in French. Because I'm doing kind of a translation path, so I have to translate in French and sometimes in English. So,
wow. And what is Chinese studies? What does that mean? Are you studying like Chinese history, Chinese language, or?
I think it depends. Like first, the bachelor degree in Chinese studies that I did, I had language classes, history and literature, and some civilization. And when you move to master's degree, you kind of have the opportunity to choose different paths. So I decided to do translation because in my head, translation, you have to learn more vocabulary, know very like kind of be an expert of the Chinese language. And that's my goal to do, to be. And I, here in my master's degree, I only have Chinese classes, but it's not like you have a textbook and stuff. It's just more about press articles and in this domain. And I have a lot of translation classes. And I have three. The first one being classical and ancient Chinese. The second one is pre-modern Chinese. And the third one is modern and contemporary Chinese literature.
Do you want to be a translator in the future, like for a job?
No.
No? Oh, no. Oh wait, then why are you taking this route?
And people keep asking me this. And I think because I had some friends doing kind of the same thing in Paris, but they don't do the translation path. And we just compare our classes. And I think I'm learning more Chinese than, and that's what I wanted to do. So I'm kind of happy that I've done this. But it's harder, but it's better to learn.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. I very much so get that. That's part of the reason I'm taking the HSK test is because it's a lot of vocabulary. Yeah, so I don't necessarily need the test. I've never picked up my certificates, but I want that vocabulary in my head. Okay, let's go back to 15. So when you were taking Chinese classes for the first time, how did you study outside of the classroom? Did you use flashcards? Did you write the characters a lot? How did you study?
I wrote the characters a lot, like always.
Yeah.
But again, I think my memory at that time was very visual. So I just had to look at the Chinese word. And even nowadays, I just have to look a good 2 minutes and it's stuck in my head like forever.
Wow. The first time you look at it.
Yeah.
Wow. You really did pick the right language to learn. Wow.
Yeah, really did.
Does it look like the meaning to you? Is that why it sticks?
I don't remember, no. I just, because it's the same thing in English or in French. I just have to look at the words. If I'm learning something new, I just have to read and it's just stuck in my memory.
Okay, when you're looking at the words the first time, are they in a sentence or is it just the word by itself?
They were in easy sentences. So we have this textbook, we have the vocabulary list, and then next to them, we have like very easy sentences, like no more than 10 characters with easy vocabulary again.
Okay.
And it's the way to use them and to see how to use them.
Gotcha. So they were in a sentence. Were there any things you remember being difficult about learning Chinese when you first started?
Definitely the tones and the way to pronounce things. For Chinese learners, it is, I think, very important to go abroad and to just speak.
Now, in a lot of beginning Mandarin Chinese classes, they spend a lot of time on individual tones and syllables, but not necessarily words or sentences. Now that you're very fluent in the language, do you think that's a useful thing to do, or do you think they should just start with sentences?
I think starting with sentences is more, probably a more useful way concerning Chinese, because I remember that time when I went to Taiwan, I only knew a lot of words, but sometimes I didn't know how to use them. So I was just shouting words from time to time, trying to people to understand me. So I think basic. You don't have to learn crazy long, difficult sentences, but just a way to use the words you already know. It will just build your language more fluently, I think.
I agree. I have some words at my disposal right now, but I can't put them together too much. I mean, I have a couple of sentences that I use, but most of them are just words. So I find myself talking like a two-year-old, like I want or this, here, now, left, right, that kind of thing still. And I'm like, yeah, I probably should get a few sentences. I can read sentences, but I can't remember how to say them yet. So
it will come. It will definitely come.
Oh, and part of that is me wanting it to come. I'm so not inspired to speak because I know how difficult it is. And I know what's going to come back at me is more language I can't understand. And that's really frustrating to me. Whereas with the book, it's just me and the book and I can circle it. I can look in my dictionary. I could go slow. Yeah, but speaking is so fast.
I totally understand being like just you and the book, because when I'm doing translation in my apartment, I just have my dictionary, I have my computer, I can take my time. Mm-hmm. But when I'm doing this in class with the teacher, I have to be like on time all the time and just, I have to know everything they ask me. So that's just more challenging.
Oh, that is challenging. I interviewed a Chinese woman who's a simultaneous translator. And so she's going to like these government conferences and all of these things and translating. And she said she's done it so long now that she's trying to get the style of the speaker, not just the meaning of the word. Can you imagine
that's the level we can try to go to.
I know. And I was like, I didn't even realize that was something that translators thought about. I was just like, get the meaning out. But she's just like, she wants the personality of the person. Just as a challenge for her, because the content's not interesting.
Always found these kind of people fascinating because they can translate in just like a second and it's just mind-blowing.
Me too. It just, any translation is amazing to me, and simultaneous translation where you can't skip a beat is just amazing. Absolutely amazing. Yes. So it sounds like you're not a flashcard person. Is that true?
I'm starting to be, actually. I never was, but right now I'm kind of using them and just write them down. And I think it's just because I've came to the conclusion that I've been learning Chinese for about 7 or 8 years now.
Yeah.
But I want to, how can I say that, feeling motivated again, finding new way of learning and just try to see the more enjoyable things, because I'm learning way more difficult things right now. So I have to kind of understand how I can make this whole process more fun.
Well, are you using like an app like Anki, or are you using paper?
Yes, I'm using Anki on my iPad. Sometimes when I just want to write down and stuff, I just take a paper and write them on it. Depends on my mood.
Oh, I hear ya. Korean, Japanese, and Russian, when did those come in?
The Korean and Japanese came right after the Chinese, because I've always been fascinated with Asia and I was fascinated with Japan. So I wanted, okay, I have to start Japanese. And then Korean just came along the way. Like, I mean, I know a lot of people who study Korean, they started to learn Chinese and Japanese, and it's just like always the kind of the free language that if you speak one, at some point you will start learning another one.
That's what I've heard. I heard that Koreans use Chinese words when they need to be more specific.
Yeah, they are called the hansha.
It makes me laugh because a lot of Chinese words are very vague.
Yes.
So thought of using them to be specific is funny to me.
And it's interesting to see that Chinese characters are also in Japanese, in Korean. So if you start with Chinese, you kind of have, it's a bit easier not to understand, because sometimes it doesn't have like the same meaning, but just the way to remember characters.
Oh, yeah.
It's easier because I have some friends doing Japanese studies.
Yeah.
And they always told me that the kanji, that the Chinese characters are horrible to learn. And I was like, it's easy.
It would be easy.
Because I've just done that.
Yeah, because Japanese has, what, 3 scripts? And the hardest one are the Chinese characters, and they use the traditional ones, which you're already very familiar with. So yeah, so that makes sense. Are you conversational in Japanese at this point?
No, definitely no. The Korean Japanese is just like, for right now, it's just more for fun, just talking on myself and be able to read a few sentences. It's just very beginning. child because I have to focus on my Chinese studies.
Well, yeah,
which you're takes a lot of time. But I'm using other languages actually to take some breaks from Chinese to take my mind off.
Just wow. I've heard of that. I just stop learning languages when I take a break from languages. I hope someday to be at your point. So wait, you were in Taiwan for, was that 1 year?
Yeah, 1 year.
Okay. Have you lived in mainland China?
No, I just went there with my high school for 2 weeks as a high school trip with my teacher and classmates.
Oh, okay. Where'd you guys go?
We went 1 week in Chongqing. Mm-hmm. And the second week in Beijing.
What? The country is so big. Those are the only two places for 2 weeks?
Yeah, because we really wanted to, because in these cities, we just did like a lot of things, very touristic things.
Mm-hmm. It makes sense to spend that much time in Beijing. There's so much historical stuff up there.
Yes.
Definitely. So have you taken any of the HSK tests?
Yes, I did. Okay. I did 3 years ago. I did the HSK-4, but I wanted to take the 5 also. Yeah. But they, in France, for some reason, the 4 and the 5 were at the exact same time. So you either take one or the other. And
oh,
I was like, come on. So for security, because at that time I didn't know kind of my level, so I just took the level 4 that I succeeded in getting it. But so far, I never took it again. But right now, my teachers want me to pass the HSK-6. At the end of the year. So I was like, we will see.
Oh my gosh. At the end of this year?
Yeah, in the end of 2019. But I think they said that in a way that at the beginning of 2020, the HSK would take place. So I think it would be more at the beginning of 2020.
Gotcha. And you're taking classes and studying and translating. You're probably very ready for HSK-6.
Probably. I don't know. We will see. But it just takes a lot of time because, as you said, I have my classes, I have the HSK to learn on myself, and I also have a thesis to write. So it's just everything together. I just have to study every time.
No, that's true. That's true. That's true. Just for the listeners, HSK-6 is the last level. There's only 6 levels to the HSK Chinese language test now. So once you take that, you're done.
You're good to go.
You're good to go. You can figure everything else out from there.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And are you going to take the computer test or the paper test?
I think in my university, we can take the both, actually. You can choose. But I'm not sure I will have to, because I changed university between my bachelor and master's, so I have to.
For the HSK-4, did you take the paper one?
I took the paper one, yes.
Okay. That's brave. Wow, you did write the characters a lot. Because for the writing for HSK-3, it's a word. So it's not that big of a deal. But for HSK-4, 5, and 6, you have to write entire essays, don't you?
Yeah, for the HSK-4, it wasn't like a big essay. It was sort of for several sections of the test. You have to write down sentences, sometimes 3 to 4. And make a good sentence to see if you can use the grammar points and stuff like that.
Sure.
But it was it was easy, but it's just like the time you have to think, the pressure of the test.
Yeah.
And because you have the audio going on, you have to just keep going. Just have to, keep
going. Yeah. Oh my gosh. And they apparently are very strict with the script. Like you have to write very neatly on top of everything.
Yes,
else.
Exactly.
And in the right stroke order.
Yes.
Wow, I'm even more impressed than 5 minutes ago. That's so crazy.
I think personally that the HSK test not really showing your actual level.
Oh yeah.
Because I have some friends who told me like you just have to learn the vocabulary and you can guess, because the guessing game in the HSK, it's very sometimes it doesn't make sense. Like if you have a sentence and you have 4 answers about plants, and you have 2 about animals, you know you can just took these out. It's just more like a strategy test for me than an actual knowing Chinese test.
I can only speak about 1, 2, and 3. Well, because HSK and HSKK are different tests. The HSK is the writing, reading, and listening. And then the HSKK is the speaking test. And it's a completely different test.
Yes.
So, the HSK doesn't at all tell you how you can use the language verbally. So that in and of itself. I think HSK is more like you can recognize the words.
Yes, I think that's the main thing. Like, you know all the words and you can guess. And even if you don't know like half of them, you can guess the one you know and just try to guess the other ones.
Definitely.
So it's more like a game rather than a test.
I think we're probably selling it a little bit short. It's probably a little bit of language learning and a lot of stress.
Yes.
Because honestly, if you walked into even HSK 1, no, because 1 and 2 still use Pinyin. But if you walked into HSK 3 not knowing any part of the language, I don't think guessing would get you very far.
Yeah, you have to learn at least some vocabulary too.
So it's a little bit of learning and a little bit of strategy and a little bit of the people around you not being too loud.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Are you a language learner that lives outside your passport country and you want to join us in the language learning podcasting space? We want you. We very much so want you. And I have two things that I'm willing to offer you to help you get started. One is a free month on Podbean. Go to podbean.com/virtualexpats. Don't forget the S. You'll get a free month. You can experiment with the service. You can even try podcasting from your phone, which you can do now with Podbean. And you can see how responsive their customer service is. Because I can tell you all the good things that have happened to me when I've contacted Podbean, but honestly, you need some hands-on experience with it in order to understand what a fantastic podcast host they are. The second thing is I'm going to be doing my first beginning expat podcasters workshop in September. The first one will be once in September. It will be maximum 4 people and myself in a room on Zoom cloud recording. And I'm going to share with you the things that I have found out in the past 2.5 years while podcasting outside my home country. Why am I emphasizing the expat part of this? Because there are things you need to think about and there are things you need to set up in your quote unquote branding of your site. And they're different than if you're just at home podcasting. So those are things I definitely want to share with you that I don't think you can find in many other places. I'll also be sharing some basic resources in getting set up with your good mics like your Samsung QTU that I'm using right now, Focusrite Mixer, which you probably don't need when you're first starting, your basic setup with your computer, what software to use, where to host, how to plan out your content, how to plan in your breaks, which is a very important thing, believe it or not, especially when you're an expat and you have a little more movement geographically than a lot of folks do, because you're not only going home probably pretty often, but you're going to different countries to explore the region that you're in. So yeah, let's think about that. So there's a lot of things you need to think about and a lot of things you need to plan and a lot of resources that you need to find, but you don't need to. I have found them and I want to share them with you. Go to hearshare.weebly.com. That is our new website name. And you will see the sign-up sheet for the first ever beginning expat podcasters workshop. It's very much so a resource dump. It is a one-time, 2-hour experience. And of course, I'll be available afterwards if you have any questions, but I mostly just want to get you going in the right direction and give you lots of resources so you can start your expat podcasting experience with your process language podcast. I would really, really like to hear what language you're learning, how you're doing it, and the ups and downs of that experience. And I know others would too. And hey, once you get going, you get a few episodes in, we could have your promo here on a Changing Scripts show on the Geopots podcast. That would be lovely.
Oh my gosh. So you have a lot of languages that you've been exposed to. When you're studying one actively, do you lose any of the other ones that you're fluent with?
I don't think so, because when I'm learning, for example, when I'm learning Chinese, I don't learn Chinese with French. I sometimes learn Chinese with English, and when I learn English, I sometimes learn with French, sometimes with Chinese. I just try to always mix all of these languages together, not lose some of the others.
By saying, okay, wait, say that again. You learn Chinese but not with French. So you're just learning Chinese from within Chinese now.
Yeah, right now I'm just trying to learn Chinese with Chinese and sometimes with English. I just play with languages that I know, but learning a language in the language, in the same language, I think that it's a big of hard work.
It's just repeating again and again. So I would say that.
That's right. You were the person that recommended that app. What is it? Viki? V-I-K-I?
Viki.
What kind of shows do you watch?
The one I finished watching like 2 days ago was A Love So Beautiful. And I really enjoyed this one because the Chinese is very easy and they show high schoolers going through university and from university to life. And it is just very nice to see the vocabulary, the sceneries, and just the basic life of Chinese people. So I really, really like this one.
Oh, very cool.
And it is also available on Netflix, so you can also watch it on Netflix.
Very cool, very cool. So you've got a lot of languages that you've learned already. I know you're in a master's degree now, but in the future, do you see starting any different languages that you don't already know?
Maybe no. I don't know, because the future is always uncertain, because I kind of learn languages and I kind of start to get interesting languages with the people I meet. So I know I will travel a lot. So I will probably encounter people from Germany or Switzerland. Well, I don't know. So we will see. But I will try to focus more on Korean and Japanese first, for sure.
Right, absolutely. That makes sense. Do you have any travel plans to the area? And by the area, I mean my area, over in China or in Japan or Korea?
Actually, yes, because after graduating from my master's degree, so it will be next year, I will try to do a program where in France, they send French people into abroad to become language assistant for French, so just to become like a kind of a French teacher, but assisting French teachers overseas. And I will probably apply in China and Taiwan and see where things go.
Very cool. Let me know where you end up. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, I can actually choose the cities. I will probably choose 2 in China and 2 in Taiwan.
Oh, that's really, really exciting. And that's, and you graduate in June 2020?
Yes, hopefully.
That's wonderful. Oh, no, you will. You're such a hard worker. I have to tell the audience, the listeners, Tom tracks a lot of his studying on Instagram, and he looks like such a meticulous, dedicated student of life and of Chinese.
Yes, I really like to share my experiences with learning and just show people that studying could be fun and aesthetic, and just to motivate people just with pictures and a little bit of text is very, it's very nice. And it also motivates me to do so, because when I look back of what I've already done, it's just motivating to say, oh, I've already done that, I've done this, so I just want to do more and share more. So it's very cool.
That's a good point. Do you go back and look at what you've done like every week, every month? Like how often do you do that?
I do go back when I feel a little bit unmotivated, when I'm just procrastinating. I just go back to my Instagram feed and just look at all of the work I've done the past few weeks. And I just said to myself, okay, you have to go back to studying now and share some more. And I would say that if you are at any age and any subject, languages, mathematics, and everything, having a little bit of using your social media to share with others, but also to yourself, what you have done is extremely motivating. I followed a lot of Tumblr accounts and then some Instagram accounts. We call them the StudyGram, and you just document your journey with what you're studying, take pictures of what you have done, etc. And it is motivating others, but mainly motivating yourself first. And that's why I'm currently doing this.
It's also so true. It's so true. Oh my gosh, Tom. Like that StudyGram, Bookstagram, and ChineseGram. I love those so much.
Yeah, and you can find them for every single languages or every topic. It is just very cool.
And just to tell the listeners, Tom Reads, T-H-O-M-R-E-A-D-S. And I'll have it down in the show notes for you guys, but he's very interesting to watch. You're very interesting to watch, Tom.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And very inspiring. When I see your study pictures, I do think, wait, where are my materials? I got to get to work now.
That's really what makes me the happiest, because I'm receiving a lot of message from people and students all around the world. And it's just amazing to see that you can motivate people to do better in their studies, just to motivate them in doing things. So it's very cool.
So in this podcast, I interview both folks like us who are learning Mandarin Chinese after, you know, later on in life, not as a child. I also interview Chinese people who learn English and other languages later on. With those two groups in mind, what questions should I ask future guests that I haven't asked you today? What's missing?
So it's hard to think. So you said like asking questions to Chinese learning English, stuff like that?
Yeah, to Chinese people who learned English, or to folks like us who learn Mandarin Chinese outside of, like, after childhood.
After childhood.
Yeah.
It is very hard to. I'm trying to think in French first, because I think you have asked a lot of very interesting questions. But what could I ask more? Maybe if their language, their mother tongue, helps them to learn, if they are probably learning Japanese or Korean, if they are Chinese speakers, if does that help? Oh yeah, I have a question for them. If they are Chinese speakers, like from China or Taiwan or other places, probably in Asia, do they want to pursue their studies abroad, like go to the US, go to France, to go to international universities? So it would be interesting to see their point of view, if they prefer the Chinese way of learning things at university or at school rather than go abroad to learn new things and a new way to see.
That's a really good question. That's a really good question. And it's challenging to get local Chinese people on the podcast, because the podcasting host that I started to use got blocked about 6 months into the project. So they can't, without a VPN, they can't access my podcast anymore.
That's so sad.
It's really annoying, and I don't want to move because I really like my host and I like the services that they have, but it's really hard to convince people to come on to a podcast they can't hear a lot of the time. But I'm trying. I'm trying, because I want to know that also, because I taught Chinese learners of English in China, in Taiwan, and in the US, and I'd love to know what they think of those different educational systems.
Yes, because it's definitely different, because I've studied like a few articles for my project that I had last semester, and the Chinese way of learning is just learning by heart, and with a lot of pressure, unfortunately. So I would like to see and to know if they prefer to go abroad to escape all of the system in a way.
I wonder if they realize it's a very different system before they go, because a lot of kids I taught in China, like, their parents wanted them to go, but they didn't necessarily know what a big difference it was.
Yeah, that's the problem itself, because everything is kind of censored in China, so they don't have the access to probably know other things that...
Well...
It's complicated.
They're also teenagers who don't really want to know about a lot of things outside of their friends and their girlfriend or boyfriend.
Yeah.
But a fair number of people in China do have VPNs, especially the wealthy class that generally are taking the English classes. So they're not as sheltered as we think. But they do definitely have a heavy course load in high school, and they don't have that curiosity that's kind of fostered in our educational systems is not here.
Yes,
but yeah, like you said, it's a lot of memorization, and this is the right way to do it, and don't think outside that box kind of thing.
And I've seen that with Chinese students who come to France to your university, because in France, the teachers always ask our opinions on the topic we're studying. They told me, like, in China, it never happened to them. So it's very new to them to express their own point of view without being criticized or anything. Because in France, you can say whatever you think, and because that's what creates debates, topics and stuff like that. So that's pretty new to them, I think.
It is. And sometimes when they do try to express their opinion instead of the one they're supposed to memorize, they are, as you mentioned, told, no, this is the right answer. This is the right answer.
Exactly.
So yeah, no, I am definitely adding that to the list, and I really hope to get more native Chinese speakers on here so I can ask them these questions in the future. So I definitely will use that going forward. The distance between when I interview people learning Chinese for this podcast and when I can get native speakers is, it's just such a huge difference. I'll get like, you know, 6 or 7 non-native speakers learning the language, and then I'll get maybe 1 native speaker. Yeah. I wanted a balance, but you do what you can.
Exactly.
So I've already mentioned your Instagram. Is there anywhere else online that you want listeners to be able to reach out to you?
I think if they come to my Instagram, they will understand where to go next, because I'm Tamriz basically everywhere. But and because of your YouTube channel, I will really try my best to upload more about my learning experiences with Chinese on my YouTube channel. So thank you for motivating and inspiring me for that.
You're welcome. Thank you for telling me that. I was at a very difficult point in my language learning when I first heard you say that, and it really, really helped me. So I agree with you. I think social media is a really, really good motivator for keeping going with language learning.
Yes, and to practice with a lot of people.
Yes. I haven't done that yet, but I know it's there if I need it. When I need
it. Yeah, like right now I'm practicing my English with you, so that's amazing.
Oh, see, your English is so good. I think of it as you just using, not necessarily you practicing.
But I'm still practicing.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay.
Anyway, no, seriously, thank you so much, and good luck in your studies, and I will see you online.
Yeah, for sure, and thank you again for the opportunity.
All right, 3 quick thank yous before we go. Thank you to our guest Tom for his illuminating and inspiring conversation. I hope someday I can do an interview in one of my other languages just like he did. That's just amazing to me. And talk about a third language like he did. Just wow. Wow, wow, wow. Thank you, Tom. Again, he's Tom Reads on Instagram. It's one of the most interesting feeds that I have seen. Also, a special thanks also goes out to Damon Castillo. He is gracious enough to let us use the background music that we're using. You're hearing the instrumental version. You can hear the full version with the lyrics right after this closing is over. This particular track is called I Got to Be Right, and it's off of the Mess of Me album. You can find all his information at damoncastillo.com or in the show notes, or at geopets.podbean.com. The show notes are available there. If you are lucky enough to live in or have easy access to Central Coast California, he is on tour this summer. There are 2 dates currently on his website. August 31st, which is a Saturday, Indian Summer Concert, Sea Pines Golf Resort, and that's in Los Osos. On September 7th, he's in Santa Maria at the Cottonwood Canyon Winery. And I always talk about Damon, but not his band. And I want to include more information on that from episode to episode. And his sax player, the Honorable Larry Kim, that is my title for him, because holy cow, if you have seen them in concert, you understand the lungs that Larry has on him. Larry apparently had a birthday last week, and Damon put it on his Instagram, and I just wanted to say right here, right now, happy birthday, Larry. You bring a lot of joy with your musical skills, a lot. So thank you for that. Also, Damon's new song is out, but it's only playing locally in San Luis Obispo on a few radio stations. I'll let you know when it's available in a more widespread fashion. I know I'm going to be one of the first people to buy it because I love their music so much. Also, thank you, of course, to you, the listeners. It's because of you and your geeky interest in language learning and the language learning process and our language stories that I'm here with another interview episode. I look forward to hearing from you in any of my social media streams. Steph Fuccio, StephFuccio. That is my social media handle for now. I am back to posting on Instagram for now. We'll see how long that lasts. I was blocked out for a couple of weeks, but I'm back. For more Geopat podcast episodes, including the other 2 types of shows, Bookish Expats and Virtual Expats, go to hearshare.weebly.com. Hearshare is H-E-A-R. That wordplay is intentional. Or you can type in Geopats in your podcast app and we will come up. If you don't find us, let me know and I'll get us listed there. Thank you so much, and more soon.
Gotta be right.